This is a People First Radio podcast.
Artificial intelligence is making its way into more and more areas of our lives. It's a phenomenon that isn't likely to slow down anytime soon. While AI isn't necessarily a big part of our official, publicly insured healthcare system quite yet, Zoha Khwaja says that day is coming, so we should be proactive about figuring out some guardrails. She's also drawn attention to AI-powered mental health apps from private companies that are out there right now. In a recent article in The Conversation, Khwaja wrote about the potential for misconceptions around what exactly AI mental health apps can do right now.
I'm Zoha Khwaja. I'm a current Masters of Science student in Health Sciences at the Simon Fraser University here in Vancouver or Burnaby, British Columbia. My thesis is focused on creating ethical guidelines for voice-based technologies that will be utilized to assist clinicians to diagnose, monitor, and predict mental health and mood disorders. And I have a background in psychology, and I've been working in the healthcare-related research field for about 8+ years now.
And we're going to be talking about your thesis today. We're also going to be talking about a big part of it is AI chatbots. And I think that's a good place to start. Can you help me understand what exactly is an AI chatbot?
Yes, thank you for asking. So AI chatbots are essentially these conversational agents that you can download on your mobile app. They're easily accessible and they can have conversations with you. And so we can, a shorter version to call them our chatbots, and they use both natural language processing. This is either written or verbal, and they can understand human language that way, coupled with machine learning. So they're able to learn with the input that they're provided and to reach a desired output that, which would be in this case, ameliorating someone's mental health and well-being. So they oftentimes you can find them on their iOS, like Apple compatible, Android compatible, and so they're web-based applications that you can download on your phone. They're available 24/7, and you converse with them as your online therapist, as a form of talking about your thoughts and your feelings and your distresses for the day. So I think that is what they are in a nutshell, these mental health care chatbots.
I think most people are probably familiar with the idea of something like a ChatGPT and having a conversation with this AI, but what can they do in the space of mental health care or therapy? What are these AI bots capable of doing right now, and what are they maybe not capable of doing?
There's some positives of using mental health care chatbots is that they can provide better access to care, especially for those, for instance, are in remote areas and they can't access their nearby services. They're also helpful for those who have a little bit of anxiety going for in-person therapy. So they can provide a different way, not the same way to seek therapy, but they can at least provide a way for people to self-help themselves. If they have certain barriers, financial barriers could also be a reason why people might resort to these mental health care chatbots as well. They like the idea that these mental health care chatbots can also be able to customize their support and guidance that they give, which is a great feature of these chatbots. I would say they help increase access to care, and they can also help provide personalized support and guidance.
So what does it actually look like if I'm using an AI chatbot to somehow get mental health help? What am I doing? So it's like I've got a messaging app open and I'm talking to an AI and I'm kind of telling it the things I would be telling a therapist, say?
So I'll give an example of, let's say, Wobot. That's a heavily used chatbot, although has a lot of contention with how it functions. But you could go use Wobot and just download it. Wobot will start and ask you, how's your day? So you can start by relaying information about your day, your thoughts and your feelings. And the features and aspects of this technology that oftentimes is very much highlighted and advertised is that it can provide cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT for short. And that one, CBT therapy is very widely known and utilized in therapeutic settings. And so oftentimes they advertise these chatbots for being able to provide CBT. And so it's cognitive restructural therapy. So when you're relaying your thoughts and your feelings, a chatbot such as Wobot would be able to restructure the way you're thinking about, negative thoughts. And in that way, it can help ameliorate, your mental health and your mental state. And that is a way that you can utilize a chatbot. Another way would be utilizing it to record your thoughts and your feelings and sort of a diary, and thereby monitor your moods and see how it fluctuates. So it's like a pocket therapist almost. Therapist, I say very loosely. It's really great for those who are facing some emotional distress and would want assistance immediately. And another way to really help restructure their way of thinking. And also oftentimes these chatbots can also relate people to resources that they can avail if enduring times of distress.
And so your thesis is exploring basically how to create a governance framework for how AI chatbots can be used for therapy. Why is this something that we should be worried about right now?
Yes, that's another great question. So currently what we have on the market are not medical grade chatbots. They're not FDA approved. They have not been approved by Health Canada. And so the problem over here is it's twofold, I would say. Number one, you can't regulate them because they're not medical grade devices. And secondly, they can't perform therapeutic functions that we would like, for example, diagnostics, prediction, and monitoring where it can be utilized by a therapist. The chatbots that are currently on the market right now, they're more like wellness apps or these self-help tools. And when people tend to utilize these thinking that they're seeking therapy or other alternate forms of therapy, what happens is that a therapeutic misconception that occurs over there where they don't realize that the chatbot is limited in its functions and therefore cannot really assist them with what they're hoping they would in terms of their mental health. So my thesis is looking at chatbots that use voice and how these could be used in more clinical and therapeutic settings as medical grade devices, and thereby they can be regulated as they would fall under the health regulations as medical devices.
This is People First Radio. My guest is Zoha Khwaja. She's a master's student at Simon Fraser University. We're talking about AI-powered mental health tools, both what people should keep in mind about the ones on the market right now and what the future may hold. So the issue right now is that there are these apps that kind of advertise that they're going to be like therapy for you, and then they aren't kind of approved by a regulatory body that says, yes, these are healthcare grade tools. So there's the potential for people to have maybe a misconception about what these tools can do, leaving them maybe vulnerable to some unintended harm.
Yes, exactly. So what happens there's a therapeutic misconception is the idea that a person who uses these technologies assumes that they are receiving a care and therapy, which is similar to that they would in a traditional form of a therapeutic setting. So they're actually underestimating the limitations and overestimating the therapeutic benefits that they would receive from these chatbots.
So what is the level of maybe regulation that exists around any of this right now?
Yes. So currently there isn't any actually. for in terms of legal and regulatory, the AI sphere is coming up. And although there are some regulations in terms of software, and there are some regulations for instance, in the US, they have HIPAA, which is the Healthcare Information Portability and Accountability Act. Oftentimes, you will see on these websites of these chatbots, they will say they're HIPAA compliant. Although they're not FDA regulated, they follow the HIPAA laws. But this is quite false, as being HIPAA compliant, it requires two things. And one of them is that you have to be collecting medical healthcare information. And the second is that if you are collecting this information, it should be for a reputable or a healthcare organization, or you're a business associate of those healthcare organizations. Hence, you can carry and collect this information. Often these chatbots that are being put out, like Wobot, Waysa, and a couple of others, these are privately owned. They're not collecting health information for healthcare organizations. And so when they have this, it alludes to the fact that these are medical grade devices that can provide medical advice, which is not the case. We do anticipate that such can occur, where in 5 to 10 years, we will be seeing AI being integrated into our healthcare system as more medical grade tools. But right now, when we are looking at these devices that are currently on the market and sometimes have a subscription fees, they're not intended for replacing therapy. They're not intended to completely it's a nice way to bridge in this gap that we have of lack of mental health care workers, but it is a band-aid solution and it cannot be used to replace currently the problem, which is the overburdened clinicians, lack of healthcare workforce. I would say that is why we need a little bit of regulations in terms of who has access to the data that these private companies are collecting, who is sharing them, are the data that users who are trusting these apps disclosing mental health personal information, who has access to them, is user data being used to train other algorithms, is there any financial incentives behind creating these mental health care apps as well.
Do you have any of the answers to some of those questions around the data involved here? Or is there anything you feel like people should be cognizant of if there's this potential to be using, presumably disclosing very sensitive personal information to an AI chatbot if you're using it for a kind of therapeutic purpose? What do you need to be thinking about as regards your data?
Yes, that is a good question. So in terms of user data, the privacy agreement should be available to users, and it should be periodically presented to users about how their data is being collected and used and who has access and who owns the data. Oftentimes what happens is when these chatbots are being advertised in labels that anonymous, 24/7 available, have been created with the help of therapists and have been accredited by these organizations. Users tend to trust these chatbots and disclose very personal and private information. So to kind of negate that, a one way that developers and software, these companies, what they can do is to prevent this, is to have more honest marketing of these chatbots, and also have not warning labels, but periodically inform users that this is an AI and this is what it's meant for, and that they don't share the same user, patient, and provider confidentiality as they would in an actual therapeutic setting. And they should also be encouraged to go and actually seek out traditional forms of therapy instead of using solely this chatbot as a therapeutic device.
We've been talking a lot about AI chatbots and AI generally, but a lot of your work focuses on voice-based AI specifically. Can you tell me maybe a little bit about how that works and what is important to take into consideration with voice-based AI as opposed to like a chatbot?
my research is part of a larger project called Bridge to AI. It's a National Institute of Health funded project. And there are many other data generation projects that are being hosted by them. And one of them is looking at voice, specifically using voice as a biomarker for health and ensuring that that is clinically safe and trustworthy and ethically sourced. I'm part of the Bridge to AI voice consortium, which my supervisor, Jean-Christophe, is the lead of the ethics team. And so in that project, we are really assessing and making sure we're involving lots of stakeholders, so a lot of expertise in voice-based diseases, as well as how your voice itself can be a biomarker for detecting and diagnosing other diseases. And this would include voice disorders, mental health and mood disorders, Alzheimer's and pediatric disorders among the five cohorts that we are looking at. And yes, so voice as a biomarker for health is essentially how your voice, which would include your speech and also other respiratory diseases, can help identify these disease cohorts. Although this is very emerging and new and it's rising, the voice coupled with voice as a biomarker, coupled with machine learning, it's a very emerging field, which has a lot of promises in terms of increasing diagnostics and prediction of these diseases. We have to make sure that it is done so ethically.
So I'm familiar with the idea of biomarkers in maybe medical imaging, that an AI might look at some medical images that have been taken of someone and be able to diagnose something. It's the kind of the same idea of voice biomarker, is that an AI could listen to your voice and maybe be able to detect something health-related?
Yes, that's actually a very good way of putting it. In fact, we hope that this can be used in conjunction of other forms of biomarkers, which you mentioned, which would be imaging and radiology, and just to increase accuracy in diagnostics. Your voice, it's very unique to individuals. It can tell a lot about a person, and that would include these diseases. Currently, a voice as a biometric, it's under HIPAA regulations and laws because it can identify people. So we have to be very careful. And also, it also creates these hurdles right now with the voice consortium of using voice as a biomarker, as it prevents us from using multimodal ways of detecting and diagnosing diseases. So yes, it is. We're hoping that we can create an ethical way in where voice data is collected and we can use it for diagnostics, but also in a way where it can be used in conjunction with other forms of biomarkers, as what you just elucidated before.
You're listening to People First Radio. Zoha Khwaja is a master's student at Simon Fraser University. Her thesis is looking at how to proactively create a regulatory framework around how to ethically use voice-based AI-powered chatbots in various aspects of healthcare. So we're getting to the point where it's not only, you know, if we're thinking about data concerns and talking to an AI-based therapist, it wouldn't only be the things you say that you could think of as your own data, but the voice you're using to say them with.
Yes. In fact, voice and speech are different in that sense. So you use your voice to create speech. And so the AI technology would be itself be able to focus more on the voice. So how their jitters and shimmers and the way your tonality is, it's able to use those identifiers to help detect. And this is not, it's not doing this on its own. This is voice as a biomarker is a field that a lot of laryngologists, people who are experts in voice, they have noticed that it has this ability to predict diseases. And so coupling that with machine learning to almost accelerate this predictive capability, it is a very emerging field that is very revolutionary. It can help with a lot of clinicians when they are making recommendations and what to look at. And they have seen with small data sets that it has been proven to have some kind of promising results. But again, there's very limited data on it. So those are problems as well. The data sets are small currently because people are very apprehensive to use such technology. So we do anticipate that this will be in the future, will continually develop and become perhaps a diagnostic tool, and there where it can be used in a therapeutic setting and say you can use it as a therapist that can be utilized as a medical technology. With my research, we want to make sure when we are anticipating its clinical and therapeutic use down the stream, it is done so ethically. There are regulations in place to ensure patient privacy is protected and their data is protected, and there's no risks of re-identification as well.
So is maybe the thing for people to know that as AI is becoming more ubiquitous, we're on the precipice of this becoming something that is useful and is going to be integrated into our healthcare system. And what you feel, what your research is what do we need to do now to make sure that that is done in a healthy way?
Yes, you said that perfectly. That is exactly what it is. And it's not even that we're saying that, oh, this may happen. Like, it is coming up, as you said, it's seeping more into all fields. And we're seeing it in the mental health care field. It is so easily accessible, AI nowadays, that we need to be cautious on over-reliance on these technologies as well for people who have quick access to them. As much as they can help increase access, they can also have ethical concerns, such as providing harmful advice due to bias in their algorithms, how they're being advertised, and also being unable to foster autonomy for users that utilize these chatbots, especially when their autonomy is already diminished in the first place. So yeah, just keeping in mind that this can be a great tool, but at the same time, there should be regulations and guidelines to ensure that it is safe and, as you describe, healthy for our populations.
So maybe the takeaways are, if you're in the field of government drafting regulation right now, that is what you should be thinking about. If you're just an individual person who might be consuming these services, know that the ones that exist out there right now are just kind of things that private companies are running that may or may not be useful, but aren't kind of Health Canada approved.
Yes. And that is actually, yes, that's very true. They are privately owned. And some things to look for is to see, how they're being marketed. What are their accountability measures? Well, what if things go wrong? Who's to be contacted? What is the objective of these chatbots as well? Are they there to replace therapy? Are they there to be self-help sufficiency? Because they can help increase that, but it becomes very isolating as well. So it shouldn't completely negate them, because I think it is helpful for those who want to manage their mental health with a little bit of assistance. But I think understanding that those who are perhaps seeking these chatbots are also vulnerable populations who perhaps are going towards these due to other reasons, cultural factors or social factors that might be contributing to their mental health, which a chatbot cannot distinguish or understand. It cannot be empathetic, which is necessary in a therapeutic relationship. We call it a digital therapeutic alliance and not a real therapeutic alliance, as a therapeutic alliance is shown in therapy to result in really great positive outcomes, but with and it requires a therapist and a patient to interact with each other and form trust and empathy and collaborate and agree on some tasks to reach a desired goal. But with the chatbot, chatbot can't, it only mimics a therapy. It can't really emulate what a therapist can do. And so the user goes into this digital therapeutic alliance where they perceive that there's an alliance between the chatbot, even though it cannot, where they perceive that the chatbot is giving them tasks to do to achieve their therapeutic goals, which oftentimes is not completely facadic, but it's not it is not exactly how a therapist would form these bonds. Those are really important to remember, that a chatbot is limited in its capabilities in providing therapy. And when these alliances are formed, one should be aware that the chatbot cannot foster your autonomy the way an actual therapist can, especially relational autonomy, as we create our self-identity based on our conversations and relationships with others in society. And because a chatbot cannot do that, it creates this false sense of well-being where a person feels that they are taking positive steps to helping themselves and their mental well-being, when in reality, they're being tucked away from social interactions. It's very individualized. It's very isolating, and it further diminishes their autonomy. So a chatbot, it's a double-edged sword here. They have a catch-22 situation. It's a paradox. They're there, available 24/7. They give that sense of anonymity, which a lot of users value and they like. It reduces stigma, but there are also all these caveats that people need to be aware of, as well as companies that are putting forth these chatbots, really scrutinizing what are their intentions, I would say, looking at that, because they could be more financially motivated. And it's sad to see when vulnerable populations are going to be exploited on that way.
Zohad, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me.
No, thank you. Thank you for taking the time to speak with me.
Zohad Khwaja is a master's student at Simon Fraser University. Her thesis is about the design of a framework for regulation of voice-based AI conversation agents for monitoring, diagnostic, and therapeutic purposes.
People First Radio, People First Media, and People First Stories are community media projects of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society and are produced in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed do not necessarily represent the views of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society or its broadcast, podcast, and social media partners.